everyone, and welcome to the second Deconstructor of Fun Product Deep Dive podcast. I'm your co-host, Jen Donahoe, strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat and Jade Inferno.
And hi, I am the other co-host, Laura Taranto, senior director of product at Big Fish Games.
And Laura and I are teaming up again on these Product Deep Dive podcasts in the Deconstructor of Fun podcast feed. And also on YouTube, our first YouTube video, ironically, not that we're counting, was 2 or 3x more than any other YouTube video in the channel. Just you know, just saying that we may have struck gold here with the idea of bringing product deconstructions back to Deconstructor of Fun and back to the YouTube channel. So for you audio folks, we're going to do our best to describe everything that we're seeing. But if you do want to see, we do have a deck and we do have the game that we're going to pull up and show for the YouTube channel. So we know that you guys love the idea of marketing versus design versus product banter, go team marketing. So we're going to be covering games from the two most important sides. Laura kind of reps both product and design, and I rep marketing, and we fight it out. Not really, actually, we get along really well. But it should feel like you're stepping into a meeting with both of us together and seeing how we figure out and deconstruct games and make and market really the next great game by deconstructing the winners. So we're gonna get started. And the first time I yelled at Laura for making me play Whiteout Survival, which consumed everything. And by the way, you screwed me with two games. You're like, oh, by the way, Frozen City was the precursor. You almost did it again, but with Heyday. So the game that we're doing this week is Township. And Township feels like the most unsexiest farming game ever. Having worked on Farmville back in the day and having had to play a lot of Heyday. By the way, my mom still plays Heyday 10 years later because she was my competitive review person on Farmville. So you're making me play another farm game, Township. Why? Why am I playing this unsexy game?
I have to disagree with you. I think this is the sexiest farming match 3 game you could possibly find in market. We'll get down to it in a little bit later when we talk about how it's designed, but I can't think of a more beautifully crafted casual puzzle, massive game loop. That is why we are deconstructing this, because this, I think it's actually a really special game. Should I start a little bit on the history of it?
Yeah, take me through the history, because you still need to convince me.
Okay, fine. So for about as long as your mom has been playing Farmville, this game has been live. So Township is 11 years old. It was launched in 2011. So it's been around a while. And to be fair, it's already been covered by Deconstructor of Fun. Bugra and Mishka did a deep dive, a deconstruction of it on the blog, so you can check it out. However, what they covered, it has changed since then. And I think what's super interesting about this very sexy farming game is the amount of changes it's been through. Jenna has put together some some videos, and we'll go through a little bit now of what this game is. So it is a farming game.
Yeah, just to give you a sense of, with no audio, for those of you watching, if you aren't familiar with Township, you know, what it looks like from the typical kind of city builder, harvest your crops by swiping your finger. All of those core mechanics are very much in this one. And bright colors, you know, very approachable, very casual.
Feed your cows, churn butter, fill orders. This is the essence of the original game that came out in 2011. But what I think is interesting, and I know Candy Crush is up here, but I like to call these a facelift. So this game Township has had a facelift, and another example of a great facelift is actually Candy Crush. And I pulled some old images from Candy Crush, the OG, to Candy Crush, what it is today. And you can see these games evolve over time, and they have to. So I think we can jump into takeaways. So why are you sitting listening to us today? And what does Township represent? What do we want you to remember watching or listening to this podcast? And I think it's three main things. And one of them we kind of discussed a little bit, which is around the facelift, which is, well, first one, market trends never sleep. You're going to be working on a game. Doesn't matter how long it's been live. You need to make sure you are iterating continuously. I think we think about managing a live game as just throwing in live ops, and it's not that. You are constantly evaluating and adapting your strategy to make sure it is matching the market. And I think you need to be okay with a high level of change. And this change can be as superficial as changing graphics or as deep as changing the full game loop. Most of it comes down to you need to understand what risks you're taking and make sure you're evaluating and making smart decisions, because while you do want to constantly change the market, you want to make sure you are calculating your risk appropriately, understanding the space you're going into, understanding how the market's changing, so you're adapting to the changes that the players want to see. And I think Township is a prime example of this.
Yeah, you'll talk about it later, but I had no idea that they basically revamped the whole thing not that long ago. And even from the 2020 Deconstructor of Fun review, the game has had massive changes that have led to just actually massive changes in revenue. And so what's really interesting, I think, is as companies like Supercell finally are like, you know what? Why don't we put live service people on our games that have been out for 10 years? I feel like they're so late to the party, and companies like Playrix have been doing that with Township to great benefits. So we're giving that the number one takeaway, because it's how you keep something around for that long. So number two is the idea again, and we talked about this a little bit on Whiteout Survival, is the product and marketing alignment, or the peanut butter and jelly that you have by really having both teams work together. So this is a compelling way where some of the UA assets have been exploring minigame experiences that have made it actually inside of the game. And we've talked about this many times, right? This happens in Whiteout Survival. This happens even in Ebony, the 4X strategy game, where you had the pull the pin UA creative. Well, I didn't realize this, but in going and looking at some of the past creative, Township may have been one of the games on the forefront of really exploring minigame experiences in UA and then incorporating them inside the game to help players make sure that they feel and they see those ads inside the game. So, and having the product team really work hand in hand with the UA team and really know what's going on is crucial to doing that. So it's that symbiotic relationship that we're really seeing there.
Peanut butter and jelly. Yeah. Number three.
Or chocolate, so, or banana, whatever
Nutella.
Well, I guess if you're European, it's not even peanut butter, because, yeah, it would be Nutella and banana.
It'd be hazelnuts for the win. So the last one is, and I keep thinking of the Green Day song, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And I feel like what this point I want to make is counter to that. It's that they don't want you to go home. Please stay here. And I think that is a trend we're seeing in games, is creating the space where you just never have to leave. We saw it with the first product deep dive in Whiteout Survival, and it is definitely in Township as well. And the point I want to make here is that if you're going to take this approach, you have to be really careful, because if you don't consider your game loops and you just kind of start throwing stuff in, hoping for the best, you could end up with something called Frankengame, which is all of these modular pieces that don't go back to the main core loop. It can lead to problems like an incohesive experience, or an inflation in places where you don't want inflation, which is just, which is destabilizing your economy and probably going to affect your revenue. In Township's example, they do a great job of adding a lot to the game, considering how it fits into the original essence of the game, and then putting it together so it is not Frankengame. It is a beautiful, sexy new game that they are bringing to players.
Yeah, I agree. The first time when I first started playing this game, I was about ready to head out of the game. I had completed all my orders. I had spent all my, I had done everything I could possibly do. And then it was, oh, wait, well, what's this? And then there's all these other things for you to do. And then by the time I played a little bit of that, oh, wait, some more of my things, my crops were ready to harvest, or my thing. And so, again, having worked on Farmville, where it was a similar experience, a little bit more heavy on the decorative aspect than you have here, although that is a important piece of this game as well. I was like, ooh, interesting. They found a way to not let you leave. They kind of like ball and chain. They kind of put a ball and chain around you and you're like, no, 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 you don't need to go. Just stay here. We have things for you to do. It's like you're getting married to this game.
Yes.
Don't let my wife hear that.
So I think that for farming, I think going back to what you were saying about, you know, you open this game, you think it's farming. And I think the first question for me that comes to mind is why farming? If we look, because the first place I normally look is, okay, tell me data AI, you have everything. Why would they look at farming? And I mean, we have to think back to 2011, again, when Heyday was quite popular and they were taking, I believe, the lead. But I wanted to have a picture of where farming is now and what kind of opportunity space it presents. So broke it down, just looked at store revenue worldwide of just general puzzle metas. And we can still see, like, is it interesting? I mean, if from this view, not quite. It's only 7% of store revenue from the top games. I mean, match three meta is your garden and homescapes. And then there's traditional match three as well. If you combine those two together, they make up majority of the biggest slice of the pie. And farming is not, it for most, they'd be like, no, this is too small. But if you kind of dig into, well, who comprises that 7%, had a look, you know, this chart is, again, looking over the last 52 weeks, Township is just crushing it. They are crushing it. And it didn't always look like this. So right now, what is just under 40% revenue share? And Heyday did come out first. If we go to the next one, the next slide, I think I started looking at, apologies, a little hard to see, but you can sort of see this is downloads over time. And initially Heyday was dominating the market with farming games, and Township came in a little bit later. But you can see now Township is now both a leader in downloads and in revenue.
I would like to point out that my game Farmville 2 Country Escape, back when I worked on it, was didn't suck, although it was losing dramatically to Heyday back in the day. It was a very different world back then. And the fact that Township was around, I didn't even really, wasn't even on my radar back then as a competitor. And you can see it here in downloads. But the fact that they have completely reversed the trend and found a way to become relevant, and Farmville 2 Country Escape and Farmville 3, by the way, are completely irrelevant in today's world. So that really, again, it tells you something. You know, Township today, to your point on your last slide, was about 35%. The next biggest competitor was Family Island?
Family Island.
And then Heyday. But I do want to go back to one thing that you said about the category and the genres. Yes, match three is massive and it takes most of the pie, but the simulation farming category right after Sandbox, which is basically Roblox, right, is the number two category after the match games. So of all of those other genres, it is the biggest opportunity besides Sandbox, Roblox, and besides match threes. So
I usually don't tell stories. I'm not the best storyteller, but leading up to GDC, when my first GDC was back in like 2012, and I actually went to the Farmville 2, I think it was like the retrospective where they went through the game, and something stuck with me. One, they talked about, you know, how they approached the game development, but the amount of detail that went into Farmville 2, if I remember it correctly, they actually, depending on what action you took in game, they changed the tempo of the music in the background to match what you were doing. So if you were, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you were doing something that was exciting, compelling, it was action oriented, it was much faster than if it was something that was a little bit more relaxing. For some reason, that stuck with me for 10 years.
That's super cool. It may have been after my time. Listen, I left in 2014 and end of 14. So it's been 10 years since I worked on that game. So I'm not surprised if they added something like that. There is a really cool company called Reactional Music. The CEO of that company is somebody I work with at EA named Noxie, David Knox. They do a lot of this. How AI, they use AI, of course, because we wouldn't have a session if we didn't say AI, but they have music that reacts to exactly what you're saying, the tempo of the game, or different ways that allow you to have music make sense for your game. So a free plug for them, because Noxie is the best. You know, if that is of interest to you, to have to set the mood. I'm personally someone who plays with all of that off. I don't play with any sound effects or any sound, because I'm usually watching TV while I'm playing these games. That's my personal behavior, but I know some people really do enjoy the different things. Okay, sorry. Back to the charts. You have another chart here?
So this is revenue. So this just shows revenue by same kind of group, top farming games. But you know what I think is super? So this chart knocks my socks off, which is the revenue of Township, and why, again, goes back to why it's compelling. This basically shows its revenue growth since its release, which is, this is what you want. Not a shark fin, not any of the other shapes or like anything that suggests decline. This shows continual investment and then a return on that investment, I think, due to very, very smart decisions that were made over its 11-year history.
Yeah, slow and steady up and to the right for those listening. And kind of 50-50 platform split, right? Is that the stack, I imagine? Is Android, iOS? Usually that's the blue and the green.
Yeah, it looks slightly higher
slightly
for
more
iOS,
which is typical.
Usually that's to be expected, yeah. But pretty equal.
So I wanted to do a little history lesson on Playrix. They were founded in 2004, and they started with Match 3 and Hidden Object. They made their first mobile game was Fishdom Deep Dive, which was released in 2008. Oh, wait. And then Laura wrote a joke for me. This is so funny. This game is still alive and swimming.
The fish puns never die.
If Cress were here, he'd be yelling boomer at us right now, which is probably not unfounded. So, of course, looking at data, AI, I just pulled the chart here. So they've had, as a company, you know, the data only goes back to August of 2018. But since then, 2 billion downloads, $9 to $10 billion in store revenue. That's not even counting ads. I don't know if they have a web store or not, but so this is only IAP driven. Just massive. And something that I thought was interesting about this chart as well is looking at some of their top games. Is I know we're talking about Township that has had that slow and steady increase, but you know, maybe something we should have looked into as well is there's been a resurgence in Gardenscapes. Coming around last year, around last kind of December, January, Gardenscapes was on the decline and then had a massive, massive increase. It's that purple line there that's coming up. So I was like, ooh, I should have forced you, Laura, to play Gardenscapes. And then I would have made you have the 2-for-1. I used to play that a little bit.
Me too.
And it reminds me of Gossip Harbor meets, you know, it's that renovation, you know, story-driven renovation that you're unlocking. And then they had a lot of competitive aspects to the game that I thought were pretty interesting as I played that one. So just to give you another game to dig into, maybe we'll follow up on that one.
We could actually combine it with Fishdom. So one thing that's come back is Fishdom had a little bit of a resurgence as well. So this isn't unique. This Township getting reinvestment is not a unique experience, because if in this chart between September 2019 and April 2020, you can see there's a material lift in revenue from Fishdom as well. So this is not their first rodeo investing in live titles.
That's very true, and something, you know, we should direct Supercell to them.
So I showed this actually in the Think Games Istanbul in the talk I gave, but I kind of stumbled upon this, but I broke down using the data AI revenue data, I actually broke it down by year just to see which years they were contributing to their $2 billion revenue stream. And most of their revenue actually came from the last let's say, 4 years. Over 50% came from the last 4 years, which is about the time they started experimenting and adding the many changes they've made to the game now. So this is, I would say, their investment kind of paid off.
For sure. I think a lot of this coincided with the with our point number two, which was, hey, what fake ads can we make that have mini games that we need to add inside the game that allows a player to see something kind of hyper casual, you know, easy to pick up and play, and then that actually exists inside the game, and then you're trapped and you're held hostage inside of a farm simulation game.
You can never leave.
I know.
Come back. There's more to do. Merge these things. So let's go through. We'll compare. We're going to go through now, like what they. So what are like what they changed? What did they change that made the game grow so much from a revenue perspective? So this was the original loop, and credit to Mishka and Bugra again for making this. I can't take credit for this, but this was their original loop. And this is like a traditional farming game loop. The goal is to feed your cows, get the milk, make butter. The butter is to fill orders, and then you get XP and coins, and you rinse and repeat, and then you slowly start to expand to chickens and pigs and granola and snacks, and all
bacon.
Of a sudden you have bacon.
No bacon.
I feel like you think you have bacon
in Heyday, if I remember. Yeah, your more complex orders. Yeah, so sorry. Go ahead.
And then that's traditionally the game loop. And what they changed is they made it a lot more robust. And I put them side by side. So I actually crafted a game loop. And you'll see it. So the original game loop has four actions that repeat. And then the new game loop has at least seven. And then there is what I added as the coefficient of performance, which is basically something that allows you to work more efficiently and work faster for less time. So they kept the essence of the game is the same. You're still making orders, you're getting XP and coins and building materials so you can expand your farm. They added, and not only can you kind of build up your farm, they've added something called a zoo. And it's basically an extension of the order system. So now you have even more orders. And then there's kind of a collection, and there's like a card rarity. So it goes back to the collection system where you need these cards to put animals in your zoo and then get more orders. They have various factories, again, that hasn't changed. I'd say what they did add is this, if in the screen I have to the upper right-hand side, they added basically a match three engine with a second meta wrapped around it as their seasonal events loop. So you have match three where the standard match three loop where you play a level, get stuff, play another level. But where it gets interesting is that they've tied it all back together. So you play a level and then you get energy, which then goes into your second meta, which is either Grid Merge or Expedition. A Grid Merge game is similar to Jen's favorite Gossip Harbor or
Travel Town.
Travel Town, Moonactum's Travel Town, or Metacord's Merge Mansion. And for the Expedition, it's slightly different. If you've played Fiona's Farm by Ace Games, I would call that an expedition where you expend energy to explore a space. So there's a secondary loop within seasonal events that resets every monthly.
Month? Yeah.
Yeah. That you basically can now play in. So when you're waiting for your orders to fulfill, you can go and play their seasonal event. And then you have your energy system to play in your secondary meta, which is either the merge or the expedition. And you have lives to allow you to play basically the match three. So now you have like three different, I guess, time, energy, resources that you can manage. But what's clever about this, I think, well, there's a lot of things that are clever. First is that they've integrated a number of season passes. So the first season pass I put here, you get items for your match game, you get farm resources, and you get items for efficiency. So they've been very smart to put in the kind of the overarching season pass, everything you would need. And we'll pull that up now so you can see it.
Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world?
Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description. This episode is brought to you by Data AI. Yes, they were called App Annie back in the day, but let's not talk about that. Let's talk about how Data AI is the first company to combine consumer and market data with the power of artificial intelligence. And Data AI does this to unlock unique consumer and market insight to accelerate competitive advantages across all digital channels worldwide. What we here at Deconstructor Fund really like is Data AI's Game IQ tool. It's this fantastic market and competitive intelligence tool for mobile gaming that allows publishers to really get to the feature level of a game without doing the full-on deconstructing first. Using this tool, your team can quickly tie features to performance KPIs, which will help you make difficult roadmap decisions. It's also a great tool to identify hidden growth opportunities as you can analyze games on a scale. As you well know, there are hundreds of thousands of gaming apps in the App Store and thousands of new mobile games released each month. And while we don't want you to stop reading and listening to Deconstructor Fun, the fact is we can't cover it all. With Data AI, and especially their Game IQ tool, you'll be able to efficiently determine what features provide a lift, make roadmap decisions based on accurately modeled expected outcomes, discover how competitors lifted performance through feature releases, benchmark performance against your competitors, focus with confidence on the highest potential genre for a new game release. We here at Deconstructor Fun are huge fans of Data AI, so what are you waiting for? Go to Data AI and try the service for free.
You look at my ugly town. I optimized for efficiency. Please don't judge me how I decorated. I did not buy any decorations whatsoever.
I'm the same way. Yeah. I could not care less about the decorative aspect, although having worked on Farmville again, This is a game where it's important to know the segments of your audience, because so many people, kind of like Animal Crossing, it's what my wife does in Animal Crossing. She only cares about decoration. She only plays the game to unlock the decorations to constantly customize and upgrade her city. And so this is one of those areas where, Laura, you and I are all about, like, how do we play through and progress? But there's this whole segment of players who want to play this differently. So sorry, go ahead. Back to you.
Yeah. So Jen and I are aligned on this point, and I've seen some beautiful farms that is not mine. So we were talking about the game loop, why it's amazing. Two things I will add, and there's a couple things I want to show. First is that we estimate the changes probably came around, it started around 2019. Most of the changes came out 2020. And why the game loop is completely beautiful. It's very well thought out. It's put together. And what we're explaining is here. So you saw my farm. This is an example of the grid merge game. Again, the merge mansion reference. You can see it connects to the match 3. I won't play a level just to pull it up, just to show you. I've played these quite a bit. And what I was talking about previously is how these are connected. And there's a couple ways. One is the actual puzzle pass. This is the seasonal event, which is connected both to the grid merge part as well as the match 3 part and the expedition bit when it's active. It's not active right now. And you can see the rewards absolutely span all parts of the game. So it is heavy incentivization to, they're giving you rewards to go play all the parts. They're not trying to focus you anywhere. They're trying to focus you everywhere, which is smart. Otherwise, if you're not incentivized to do one part of the game because it's not integrated into any of the reward system or any of your features, you're going to ignore it. And that is not what this is. They want you to play all bits of it. And the second bit that I want to say, that this is why I think this game is so sexy. They make cash king here. So you have these three parts of the game with your three energy, with your three types of energy systems. And what you need to do in game is progress. You are gaining levels, mm-hmm. you're expanding your farm, you're getting higher in the match 3, you're going through the grid merge. Whoops. And what I think they do very well is all parts of the game sync cache. Mm-hmm. So if you want to speed up your everything, anything you're building, I'm not building anything now, but I am, let me see, what is, oh God, I've actually tried to put all of this together, but if I want to make sugar to fill an order, it costs me cash if I want to speed it up or I wait 19 minutes. If I go back into my match three game or even actually the grid merge game, if I want to buy something, cash.
It's cash. Cash
is king. And as we know in puzzle games for match three, when you need more moves, again, it is cash. Cash is related to basically progressing faster. It kind of gives the player the decision of, well, where do you want to progress more? And then they have to decide. And one thing that I think this is why it's wonderful is if there was cannibalization between these sections of the game, they would have pulled this out, but they're all still there. So I imagine it is a pretty even split that led to an incremental, a permanent uplift on their baseline revenue, putting all these features in game. So that is why I think this game is wonderful.
No, I get it. And I think, super astute observation on the hard currency being applicable across all three of these units. In fact, let me see if I can ChatGPT summarize everything that you just said. It would be something like Township is three interconnected games in one across all of the best casual genres and never let you leave. It's kind of like being married. It's or like casual games, house arrest, right? Like it's one of these two things, but the interconnected piece, right? Like it is interconnected, but it has an overarching, the overarching game pass. And then there are passes within the each individual kind of versions or modes of the game. And so
yes.
I think they've done what a lot of people strive to do, which is to have a very eloquent metagame system that allows you and gives you a reason why you keep wanting to progress across these different areas or the different modes of the game. It's like when I was at Riot, we were trying to think about, what would a battle pass be like in League of Legends, a battle pass in TFT. There were some times that some of the things that you earned could be used across both of those games. And that was nice and rewarding to the people who played both of those games. And they've done that very, very well here. So, I think that I'm just reading through the rest of what I had to say of all of your amazing stuff that you pulled in there. I wish people could, if you're listening, I wish you could see this because we're actually kind of going through and showing it. And the core loop we were showing needs to be seen because it is a work of art with all of these different drawings. But have you ever seen another game with this many kind of interconnected core game experiences that does it so well?
Yes, a 4X game.
Of all the things I didn't expect Laura to say, it would have been comparing Township to a 4X game. But I think you're kind of right in the, especially having us come off of Whiteout Survival and how we talked about how they inserted, even that Monopoly Go little mini game, right? Like it was a short limited time event. I feel like they did it in smaller chunks. Maybe than I've seen here, because these are like the match three and the farming are pervasive, right? They never go away.
Yes.
And then there's one mode that kind of flips every month. It flips from what I'll call the shittiest merge game ever, because I love other merge games, to the stupid exploration. Like the rotating mode is not for me personally. It's not what I love. But I do love match three and I do love the farming. And so even, again, for me as a player, right, and I'm speaking to this as a player, as a marketer, I'm like, ooh, that is super smart because you hit all three different motivations. You hit various types of play patterns, various incentives, various motivations when you have each of those. And just like for me, when, if you fail on one of the three, you still have something else to go to. So that's where I think a lot of the genius comes in. Do you want to flip back to the deck or do you want to show anything else?
There's only two more things I want to show.
And okay, cool.
The first is the city market. So I actually disregarded this when I first started playing, and then I realized how good of a design it is. So you can see here I have 28,000 coins. This is down from about 60,000. And I realized many of the casual games tend to have two types of currency, a hard currency that kind of drives, again, the main monetization, what drives the main revenue. And then they have this soft currency to be able to give away stuff. And then what tends to happen, you see this in grid merge games all the time, is that your soft currency ends up completely overinflated because there's not enough to spend it on. Now, in this game, you spend it on buildings and decorations, which, as you've seen, Jen and I do not use. and you have to use it for factories, use it for increasing your population, which is one of the limiting factors of how fast you can expand. So you're building, you have to build buildings. To build buildings to allow for bigger populations, to get more farming, to produce things faster. Now, what they did add is this to me is they were like, we need a valuable coin sink. And this is exactly what it is. If you remember from the core loop, you were trying to fulfill orders. Your orders are timed. You're limited by how many orders you can do at once. You're basically waiting anywhere from, you know, minutes to hours to days until things complete. This is a shortcut and it is expensive. But some of your best orders are timed. So you have kind of your very relaxed orders, which are down here in your helicopter and your train, which you need to do these if you want to continue to upgrade your storage and upgrade parts of your game. But what they've added is timed orders, which you have 11 hours to fulfill this. Now, this puts pressure on how fast you can produce. And they've added an amazing coin sink that is a great shortcut, and it drains faster than you are able to build factories or any sort of buildings if you are not a decorator. And again, I would love to see the designers give a talk, because I think the soft currency coin sink, or the soft currency sync, is one of the hardest things to do right. And I actually think they did a very good job here.
Yeah, agree. The slide that we're showing is the
expedition. So this is what's not live right now. So we showed you what's live in the current game, which is the grid merge secondary meta around the match 3 game. This is an example of what the expedition version looks like. And you can see two completely different engines.
Absolutely, yeah. Just very different play experience. Really crappy story. This from the person who thinks that the Gossip Harbor story is good, so it must be crappy. So let's talk a little bit about graphics and UI, because it has undergone a very dramatic update over the life of the game. And so one of the things was just, how did they decide where to go with it? Let me just show you an image. This is what it used to be. It was much more muted colors, a little bit more realistic colors, much more like the grays and the greens that you would see in real life. And once they started to do more UA testing, which is here, you start to see colors of where they ended up. So much, much brighter colors, more vibrant colors, actually a little bit more like Heyday, a little bit more in the vein of where Heyday went. And so this slide actually shows the comparison of Old Township to Heyday to where it ended up in 2023 and how differentiated it is. And so one of the things that you can use UA for is to kind of almost do a style test. Now, listen, you can do this in many other ways. You can do traditional consumer insights surveys, but something that can help you are either, you know, using things like Geek Lab or, you know, which is, you know, a friend of the pod, or doing your own kind of testing. So, you know, that's just one aspect that has been really interesting to see it. Let's see. The other thing that I want to talk about with the UI is, it makes me a little bit sad, is, you know, we talk about fake ads all the time. And so this slide, I took a couple of on the left side of the screen. You're going to see some of the best performing ads. I just went into Data AI. You can look at creatives. And obviously, if anything's been running, I think these ads were running for like 88 days or more. And that's always a great indicator to me. And plus, they're running in like between 9 and 16 countries. So they're actively on UA right now. They're actively pushing all of this. And you'll see that they are using, you know, in many cases, again, the really super bright colors and very simplistic, hyper-casual looking play patterns. So I know it, you know, as game makers, we're always like, kind of breaks my heart a little bit when you see ads that have nothing to do with the actual gameplay in the game, but it does show you what players are interested in and what kind of catches their eye. And a lot of it is very simplistic action. It is the, you know, the character either in a backpack or carrying like huge stacks of eggs or milk or wheat or huge, you know, tractors plowing through, you know, acres of corn. That look and feel doesn't actually exist in Township at all, but it is something that resonates. So the other one is this really interesting ad that had you like building a bridge by kind of almost like an erector set. I don't know if that translates everywhere around the world, but you know, using or Lincoln Logs also probably doesn't translate around the world, but using construction materials to kind of almost like build a bridge to help a truck with a load of milk get across the bridge. And obviously it fails because, as we know, in all of the UA ads, you have to fail. That is the what motivates players to click on the ad is, no, you're so stupid, I can do it better. And so almost every ad has a fail state these days. And so, I think you can just see how that translates still visually into the game, even if the play pattern isn't exactly the same. In fact, even in the ASO, the screenshot on the top right, like you never actually have sheep in front of the train and the player being like, oh no, it never happens. But that's the ASO image, is presenting the player with some sort of like problem or situation that isn't just come and decorate my farm. So if I were them though, I wish they would make it a little bit more one-to-one. If they're using marketing assets like this that really seem to convert and trigger, I wonder why they don't continue to add more of these type of minigame experiences in, since they're doing so well. So I will shut up, Laura. That was a lot for me. Do you want to talk about the Match 3 engine? And then I want to yell about this too. I feel like Cress in this. I'm just going to like yell at them and complain every once in a while.
So I'm going to make a very bold statement, which is I actually think this might be one of the, it's definitely hands down one of the best Match 3 engines live on the market. And I say that being a fangirl of Dream, like Dream Games for Royal Match. I think that, you know, I went back and played some of their older games. This is a significant improvement on Homescape. This is not a copy of the Homescape's engine. This is vastly improved. It has a lot more, so many more modes, different styles of play. So they do a lot more with multi-boards and gravity. I think there's two ways they could take the crown and say they are the best Match 3 puzzle on the market. And the two areas are, the first has to do with propeller logic. For those that are not as familiar with Match 3 games, when you make a square match, you make a little thing that flies. This was started with Candy Crush Soda with their fish. I believe that was the first game that had it, and that was back in like 2015. And then it's kind of been adapted since then. And then what made Royal Match so interesting is they made them smarter. So it's like every time a new game came out, they would make the propellers a little bit smarter every time. Now, it's critical when you're designing for Match 3 that you're always optimizing for how many moves the player gets versus how close they are to passing. And this is the thing where I think they could level up. They could level up their game for sure, but it would require a lot of rebalancing. And I've made this image here. So the propeller logic, if the propeller is trying to target an obstacle for me, and I've circled an example obstacle, which is the acorn hidden under the leaf patch. What it'll tend to do is, instead, if it's gonna target this bottom one, it will just go, the propeller will take a bomb and it'll go drop it where this green bit is. And you can see in red, that is the area it'll cover, which is, instead of like a not like a basically a 3x3, which is a 9 blast, it would just cover 6, because in this example, if the acorn's at the bottom of the board, then you're not getting your full value of the propeller plus bomb. And this has to do with targeting. What it should do, and if please quote, take this, Playrix, I would love your game even more. If it's targeting the green, which is fine, it should optimize to also target the greatest area of impact for the bomb that's attached to the propeller so that it always clears the maximum amount of tiles, including the original target. So that is not something it does that I would love for it to do. And then there's always something the other thing that I wish they wouldn't do is they have basically a hit point cooldown on obstacles. And where you see this, I don't have an image for this, but we can imagine. If you have two arrows on the board that are next to each other facing the same direction, what you would expect going hitting off one arrow, or one of the line clears, rather, it's a better line clears, is that if your obstacle has a hit point of three, so three states, you would expect it would reduce by two down to one. What tends to happen is there's a cooldown on obstacle. There's a cooldown on obstacle. So if you have back-to-back blast or line clears, it does not discount for all of the times it's hit if it's hit too close together in timing. That also drives me crazy. Now, most players are not going to see this, playing this from my perspective, I notice it. The only place where players will feel it is it makes it a little bit harder to pass the level. So you then have to rebalance the difficulty. And so, Jen, tell me why this isn't your favorite. Besides those two reasons, tell me why this isn't your favorite match three.
So I am a bit of a match three nerd. So outside of Merge, I love Royal Match. I love Blast. I haven't been playing Toon Blast as much. And then back in the day, I was an OG Candy Crush Saga, Candy Crush Soda, the Heroes. I mean, I did all of these, right? And so I am really into the speed and the dopamine rush that you get from Royal Match. I love how smart they are, the propellers and the different aspects. I love the types of boosters that you have. And so in this version, I do agree with you about the gravity and how the board changes a little bit. I've seen that in other games, so I didn't feel like that was particularly unique, but it's a little bit more difficult. Like, the puzzles tend to be more difficult, and it tends to be a little bit more frustrating because I can't booster my way out of it because you're so limited in, I'm going to use the jackhammer to take out one spot, or the fire hydrant is like a cross, like a line up and down, and then the one piece swap tool. So you don't have the same kind of boosters that you would have in a typical match game. And so it's a little bit frustrating. And it's frustrating because I need the energy. I need to clear levels to get energy to progress in the other modes of the game. And so then it just frustrates me. And I end up wanting to leave the game because I'm frustrated, because then I not only do I lose energy and lives in the match game, I lose it in my secondary game, and I'm waiting for my farm to go. So therefore I leave the game. So I think there's a touch of balance that I would want from them as a player, and that as the marketer, I would say, should we have different types of boosters that you can monetize to allow people to continue going so they can hit their goals? I don't know. Is that a crazy ask?
So if they make the changes I've suggested, it will make it easier. But I will tell you why these levels are hard, because they are hard. They the way they've done the cadence of difficulty across the game, in my opinion, is they've done it very well. They've intentionally made it difficult. And why is this important? I would say it's important because it puts pressure on the win streak. So the way they've structured the levels is you'll have a hard level or a super hard level that will be this difficult level that causes Jen to throw her phone against the wall. And me too. I'm like spending boosters. I probably have the average for me about 20 attempts. That's very high.
Oh,
and I'm a pretty good match three player. Yeah, pretty good. But what it ends up doing is the way they've set the structures, before you hit that hard level, you have a slew of easy levels. And guess what you're doing in those easy levels? You are building up your win streak. Now you have something you don't want to lose. And it also, they expect you to hit that hard level with three extra moves and boosters. So you're already buffed. Mm. And what they want to do is they want you, and this is not just this game, all of the match themes, they want you to incentivize buying that extra, getting super close and buying those extra moves at the end of the level. That is what they want. And in those easy levels where you're building up the win streak, I mean, it's blasty and buttery smooth, and you're so excited because you just spent 20 attempts on one level, and now you're just like flying through, and you're like, woohoo, everything's like flashing, yay, fireworks. And it's, I think it's well done. I mean, yes, it would be nice if they were a little bit easier, or the boosters are a little bit more effective. But that is like a level design art where they have to make sure how the levels are designed with a combination of obstacles. The boosters that are available can actually address them, and you feel like that they will help. And maybe that's an area they could improve as well.
Mm, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to do a little bit on social? So I think that, you know, the social, it's subtle, and it feels like many of the other games. I don't know. I didn't actually, ironically, in this game, I didn't engage as much with the co-op as I have in other games. So you may need to give a little bit more of your experience with it, but it does feel like this is, I think, where your 4X analogy comes into play, because of just how your co-op helps you move forward.
I wanted to talk to you about Heroic Labs. Building a successful game is hard enough without worrying about building your own game tech as well. Heroic Labs provides a comprehensive game stack to help you get your game into market faster and scale beyond the competition. With their Unity game framework Hero, you can cut development and prototyping time in half and quickly add social, economy, and reward systems to grow your game. Satori, the LiveOps platform built specifically for the games industry, lets you run live events, A/B tests, deliver dynamic content to players, and always keep your game growing. Nakama, the industry's leading open source game server, lets you develop locally, providing all social and competitive features for your game, and then seamlessly transition to their Heroic Cloud hosted service and easily scale to meet the largest of audience demands. Find out how to get started at heroiclabs.com.
The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for Games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for Games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for Games, supercharging the gaming landscape.
I love Supercell. Don't want to rag on them, but what I want to show works really well with this social, and I'm going to compare it to Heyday. So they're social. They have what you expect. They have your guilds. I'm in a guild. Hopefully I wasn't kicked out of my guild. So you can see here, you have all the things you would expect. You can send and request lives to the match 3. You can also request crops you need or goods to fulfill your orders. So they've expanded the system. You can basically request almost anything that you would serve an order for. Visiting friends, I don't do this as much. There's not too much there besides helping your friends submit orders. Where I think they lean into social quite a bit is, I can't remember exactly which level it was. It might have been 19. I think it was 19. Where I've unlocked something called the race. So they have a lot of cooperative events. And these are actually quite fun. I was participating in these. You can pick an area of the game you like best. So for me, it would be match 3. Maybe Jen, the match 3 frustrates you. You want to pick something, either the mine or the orders. And you have a timed amount. You basically have a given amount of time. You need to complete a certain amount of actions to complete in a cooperative race, and then you basically get more rewards that incentivize you traversing the full game loop and progressing faster, filling orders faster, doing all of that faster. Now, if I was going to give advice to Heyday, what I would say is one of the main things that's different in the social has to do with the fundamentals of the farming. So in Heyday, and I won't pull that up here, when you want to plant like crops and grow crops for orders. Oops, my barn is very full. You basically, when you put them down, you have a certain amount of inventory. So to plant a corn, you have to spend a corn. So it's corn for corn. That makes sense. You can, And the thing, though, is that when you have orders, you're using the same corn that is the basis for your planting as your order fulfillment. So there isn't place that you can run out of crops. So there is an additional crop management in Heyday. To get more crops, you then are reliant on social and friends to buy the crops. What Township does differently is it is coin-based. So as you can see here, it is entirely, it leans into the soft currency economy. So if I want to plant, all it is draining my coins, and it is a very, very small amount of coins.
Oh my God, I don't think I even knew that. I think it's so small that I never knew. Really? You spend coins to plant?
Yeah, so the most expensive, I think, is cacao, and that's 9. Like, in the scheme of things, in the relative pricing, I mean, some buildings are 5,000 coins to build. The market, the items here, these are all not super expensive, but they're, I can't buy anything. I'm out of space.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
Wheat is free, but the other ones are,
You do not really, I have not run out of coins in this game. It would be very difficult to run out of coins in this game. So it is not meant you are not meant to stop farming. Let me put it this way. You are not meant to stop farming, which is why I think Township is a casualized 4X game. You just have all the things to do. You never have to leave. You're expanding your farm. You're reliant on social. You're doing, the only thing I don't think you're doing is exterminating, because there's no bacon.
There's a hamburger. I don't know where you get the meat from. But this is not a vegan game. Sorry,
everyone.
It's a
Beyond Burger. That's what it is.
There's butter. Yeah, this is not vegan friendly, although it is a no-kill zone. Oh, cool. Okay. The one thing I think you wanted to talk about was, which is interesting, having, you know, I've worked on games, especially at Scopely, where we went from... you know, like Yahtzee with buddies to Yahtzee with buddies too, right? We two'd games, and mainly you make a two or a sequel of a game when you have like just a shit ton of tech debt, honestly, is the real reason. When you have so many new features to add that you really just can't add it in. So how do you think they were able to do that in this case, where they made such huge changes, but they kept it the same game?
You know how they did it? I think they weighed out the pros and cons. If you look at the landscape, you know how hard it is to get players in. They already had an established game. They had players already. It was a calculated risk. Do you upset your current player base, or do you invest in your current bundle ID, keep the UA going, expand and see what happens? They absolutely took a bit of a gamble, but I think it paid off, and it was the right move. Sequels are tough. A lot of times, I think I talked about this on Twig. I was looking at some of them. It's not often that the sequel outperforms the original. And I think that that trend is only getting worse. So I think it was a smart move. And
Yeah. When we did, thinking back to Farmville 2 Country Escape, we were trying to come up with the franchise plan. And back then, a lot of it was also, and again, this is 10 years ago, it was very dependent on the size of your app. You couldn't exceed a certain size because of
the good old,
you know,
days.
Remember, like your phone couldn't handle it, or the phone couldn't run it. And so after I left, they did a reskin of Country Escape with, like, it's called Tropical Island Dolphin Escape. I don't remember what it's called now. And so basically it was the same game. It was reskinned, and it never did as well, to your point, as the first one, but it was likely incremental. And so there are ways to think about, you know, how do you extend the franchise with other versions, maybe that take you in a little bit of a different direction? Farmville 3 was, I was working on it. It did, the one that ended up launching 2 years ago, I think. I don't think it fulfilled Zynga's expectations on what that could be. It was very difficult for them to find the right kind of evolution and get back to the core of what it was, because Farmville 2 Country Escape wasn't actually what OG Farmville was, which is ironically a little bit of what Township is. The idea of caring and nurturing for your animals, decorating your farm. And it was all about decoration. When you, there's an aspect of the players where it is, the farming isn't nearly as important as having the assets to, like, create your space and escape into that world. It was that kind of a motivation. So I think we wanted to recap and go over the three key things. One was market trends never sleep. You got to stay on top of that, and you got to continue to iterate to stay ahead of the curve. And you can still do that with an existing product and find a way to grow it, because Poundship did it. There needs to be kind of that product and marketing alignment, working together, testings in the UA environment, and see if you can include them into the games to make sure that conversion happens and you're able to keep the player. And the final one is right incentives and strong economy. What is this one, Laura? You can't go home, but please stay here. This is the get married to your game one.
Yes, this is the Green Day song that will not get out of my head. It's they want you just to stay. So it's like they're not kicking you out of the bar. They're like, here, you like to kill. You want another margarita? Have this. The door's always open. You have lots. You want to go play pinball? Please go play pinball. We got skee ball too. We got all the things you could possibly want. You over there, you don't drink. We got some great mocktails. So that is, and that's a trend that I think most games, the big games, are leaning into now. Mass market as possible, something for everyone.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, I think we're going to wrap up. Number two, product deep dive. Hope you all enjoyed it as much as we did. Laura, it was always fun to talk games with you. We will come back. Did you pick our next one yet? Should we tease our next one?
I'd like to run them by you first before committing you to something you may not want to play.
We'll figure it out. All right, everybody. Thank you and take care.
Till next time.
You did it. You made it to the end of the episode. As a fan of the show, it would help us out if you subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast service of your choice. More importantly, are you a member of the Deconstructor of Fun Slack group? If you have 5 years or more of games industry experience, go to deconstructorofun.com/slack and apply to join. Join the games industry's best professional community, filled with peers always willing to lend a hand. Or subscribe to our newsletter to get all the latest insights from the Deconstructor of Fun content creators. Thanks for listening.